Hi, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. Suicide Basin, a glacier lake tucked behind the Mendenhall Glacier, is a looming flood threat for Juneau residents this time of year. Glacier outburst floods, or yuckalups, have been happening in the Mendenhall River every year for the last decade, when the basin fills up with rain and meltwater throughout the summer until it drains downstream. Last year's flooding was catastrophic. As the basin fills up again, scientists at the University of Alaska Southeast are keeping a close eye on it. KTOO's Anna Canny sat down with one of them to check in on this year's forecast.
I guess maybe you could start by introducing yourself and telling me a little bit about your background and what brought you to Juneau this summer.
Absolutely. My name is David Polishensky, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher here at University of Alaska Southeast. I just started this position a couple of months ago after finishing my PhD up in Fairbanks at the University of Alaska. My background is in ice dynamics and glaciology. So Aaron Hood here hired me on to try to help with the Suicide Basin monitoring project this summer. I would say mostly I kind of continued the monitoring work that UAS, the USGS, and the National Weather Service do together as a partnership for the past several years. So this summer we've gone up to the basin now three times and conducted three drone surveys. So when we go up there, we just have a small little quadcopter drone with a camera on it, and we have it fly a regular flight path. So it's basically just like mowing the lawn back and forth on the glacier, taking pictures, looking down, and each picture has overlap with the previous. So that allows you to stitch all 2,000 or so pictures from any given survey into one big image of the entire basin. And then using digital image processing, you can turn that into an elevation map. So you can keep track of how the basin's shape is changing through time and how the water level is rising up and down.
So you talked about you're basically figuring out the shape of the basin. Mm-hmm. How much is that changing from survey to survey?
Yeah, so for this summer, it's not changing a ton, but year to year, it's changing slowly but surely. Kind of there's these two competing feedbacks for how much water the basin can hold is that the Mendenhall Glacier itself acts as a dam, and over time, as the Mendenhall lowers, the dam's elevation gets lower, and so that means you can hold less water behind the dam as the ice melts away, essentially. But then there's the competing feedback of as the Mendenhall Glacier pulls back out further into its main branch, then the surface area of this basin increases over time. I was looking at it this morning. I believe the basin has dropped on the order of tens of feet over the past couple of years as far as the ice dam elevation, but it's also expanding out into the main branch. So there's these competing feedbacks, and it's not clear which one's winning at the moment.
Right. It's getting shallower in some ways, but also wider.
Exactly.
Huh. And then so figuring out those competing factors helps you narrow in basically on how much water it can hold and therefore how much water it could release.
Right. So the monitoring efforts that we're trying to keep track of is, you know, there's basically two things we're concerned about is how much water is in the basin. And then the million-dollar question that's actually much harder is how quickly is it going to drain? So how big is your bathtub and what size pipe is coming out the bottom of it, essentially? Control the dynamics of this flood event. And we're getting better estimates of total volume over the years, especially after the big flood event last year. We were able to do a drone survey when the water level was very, very low. So that gave us the baseline topography of the basin, which we just hadn't seen before because the water level had never dropped that low before. The two really big time periods that's really important to get an accurate elevation map is right now when we're approaching the maximum water level, and then after the flood event, as soon as we can get it back up there, we want to resurvey the whole basin to get, again, this highest water level to lowest water level survey to estimate the total volume.
Well, you mentioned we're getting close to that maximum volume. When's the last time you were up there, and what did you see?
Yeah, we were up there exactly a week ago, last Thursday, and I would have to look to double-check, but I believe the water level was about 402 meters, and so it is lower water elevation than last summer, but still rapidly filling. As of this morning when I checked the monitoring website, it was about 410 meters, so we have got about, 10 or 15 meters more to go to be at a similar water elevation to last summer.
Okay. And, I mean, it's not always that it fills up and then it drains like clockwork. There's been some years where it's drained before it's all the way full, right?
Yes, exactly. So this has been going on now since 2011, and sometimes, like last year, it drains catastrophically and almost fully, but then in other years, it only drains, you know, a partial release, so 20%, 40% of the basin. And so that's really the million-dollar question, is how much of the total volume is going to come out when it begins to drain. Weather and helicopter logistics willing, we're hoping to go up again sometime in the next few days. And then once the basin drains later, you know, days or weeks from now, I would encourage everyone to keep an eye on the website for if and when the drainage does start occurring. The National Weather Service will publish a flood forecast.
That was KTOO's Anna Canny speaking with University of Alaska Southeast postdoc researcher David Polishensky. And a number of bears have been spotted in Dillingham in the last few weeks. KDLG's Meg Duff shares some tips for keeping bears away.
Like many Alaskans, bears spend the summer fishing and foraging. Dillingham residents have reported bears near town, on Waski Road, and near Kanaknak Hospital. They can also lurk near dumpsters in Dillingham because many of those dumpsters are not bear safe. So, this is your annual fishing season reminder that this is still bear country and bears like fish too. Evelyn Likwa, an assistant wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, shared tips for keeping bears away.
Putting an electric fence around your smokehouse, putting garbage out on garbage day instead of beforehand, if possible, managing their fish waste, taking it to the dump as soon as possible, or just not leaving it out to be an attractant for bears.
Likwa says if you can't put an electric fence around your smokehouse, it's good to at least keep an eye on it so bears don't get in.
You don't have to stand guard, you know, the whole time. But if you go back into the house, if possible, just keep an eye on it in case any bears are around. You can scare it off before it gets into the smokehouse.
She says that deters bears from coming back. But fish isn't the only food that could make bears remember your home.
Dog food or birdseed, you know, out in the yard or on the deck can be an attractant for bears. So keeping that stuff inside, if possible, or taking down birdseed during this time of the year is recommended.
Likwa says bears can become protective of food sources they like, which gets dangerous for people and for pets. And shooting that bear is not always a legal option.
Defense of life and property is something that can be enacted, but it's not legal if it's been attracted by improperly stored garbage or food.
Likwa advises that if bears do get close, it's best to try to get to safety, either indoors or in a group with three or more people. Then make noise to scare the bear away. If the bear is not threatening, keep an eye on it. Try to figure out what attracted it. Then fix the problem after the bear leaves. In Dillingham, I'm Meg Duff.
Three Anchorage police officers will not face criminal charges for shooting and killing a man they say drew a gun on them last month after their accounts were backed up by body cameras. State prosecutors said in a letter released yesterday that Sergeant Jesse Frey, as well as officers Isaac Kimball and Nicholas Flexing, were justified in using deadly force. The letter says that the three officers responded to 911 calls reporting shots fired near Anchorage's senior center on the night of June 3rd. They found two armed men in the area. One cooperated with their commands, but 21-year-old Tyler May ran from officers until he was brought down by a police dog. The officers' body cameras show that as they approached him, he pulled a gun from his waistband and aimed it at them. All three officers shot May with the rifles they were carrying. He died at the scene. Prosecutors say an autopsy found alcohol and marijuana in May's system. Friends told police he had been drinking that night and talked to one of them about, quote, being ready to die, unquote, shortly before the shooting. The officers told detectives they feared May would shoot them once he drew his gun. Last week, the state also cleared two Anchorage police officers who shot and wounded a murder suspect on June 1st. Since mid-May, Anchorage police have shot five people during responses, killing three of them. State prosecutors say they are working to speed up reviews of officer-involved shootings. And in Juneau today, it's a bit cloudy and around 60 degrees this afternoon. Tonight, expect rain starting mainly after 7 p.m. with a bit of wind coming from the southeast region. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO.